Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from Talk Sport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company. If this is the first time that you've ever come to listen to the Fight Night podcast, please press subscribe. I don't want you missing out on any future content that we throw your way. You can do it on iTunes. That's where we're available. And if you need an Android feed, we are available on the TalkSport website. Get yourself on there. It's self-explanatory. Just hit the button, subscribe, and it'll turn up in the feed that you receive your weekly podcasts. Now, we have a live show every single Saturday night on TalkSport. Sometimes we bring you some live fights, but when we don't bring you live fights, we bring you live debate, and we try our very best to get the biggest and best names to come and have a bit of a conversation with us. Throughout this podcast, you are going to hear from people that fought on Saturday night, both in the UFC and in boxing, that had victories, and they were, let's just say, euphoric. So we'll be speaking to them very, very shortly. We heard from Chris Eubank Jr. as well on the show. And a man that I've been a huge fan of for a short period of time, who has been doing major things over in the States, and he's on the cusp of fighting for a world title, Virgil Ortiz. Great name. He's on the show as well, so make sure you stick around for that. But first of all, we're going to start with a conversation that we had with the top-ranked president, Todd DeBoeuf. You may have seen this week that Top Rank are part of the new Sky Sports package that you are going to be receiving very, very soon. And as well as that, Todd, obviously, being the president of Top Rank, had a few thoughts on everything that's been going on with Oscar Valdez this week. This is how it sounds.
This has been something I've dreamed about for almost two decades. It's been, you know, from, you know, when Sky launched early on, and we were always sitting on the doorstep trying to, you know, get our content and get our prize fighters in front of the UK fans, because we know how well they just clamor to the sport of boxing. So, you know, it's nothing wrong with waiting a little time here, but we're finally there. And I think this is a wonderful partnership for both of us. And I think it's great for all the fans out in the UK.
Josh Taylor, the king of his division, a very popular fighter in Scotland. How excited are you of building his profile even further now and turning him into one of those crossover stars that could really conquer the world?
Well, I think, you know, I think one of the things we've put our attention at, and we credit, you know, the fighters that want to do that, is, you know, is bringing all the titles together, right? That is such a Herculean task in this business. And it is just amazing that he was able to do that. As we saw when Loma and Lopez did it, and Crawford did it at 140 with Ndongo. And I think once you do that, you are sending a message. And he fought spectacularly against Ramirez in that final piece of that equation, and in a brilliant fight where he weathered some early tough stuff, you know, then caught Ramirez and then caught him again twice in the match, and really, really showed how skilled fighter he was, and how brilliant he was on the skill side of it. And I think his personality is just blossoming. And for us to be able to bring that free to you on Sky is just another, you know, feather in the cap of the partnership and trying to get to the most fans to see it.
Have you been to Scotland yourself before?
I have not been to Scotland myself before. But I can tell you this. I can say this to you. My son, who is in college, during the pandemic, when they didn't allow kids back, and he was being educated on a remote basis, he actually said, I'm going to Scotland. And he lived in Scotland for 1 month in a Airbnb, and did all of his schooling from Scotland, and he just wanted to travel, and that was the place he ended up at. So I'm kind of, he was sharing it with me through a phone, but now hopefully in December I'm going to have my derriere over there.
Gareth, he's in for a bit of a treat, isn't he, when Todd does come over to experience those fans?
They are, pound for pound, among the most partisan, stentorian fans you'll ever see. And Josh Taylor will be, I think he's become very popular in his home country since, as you say, the brilliant victory over Jose Ramirez. But the recognition's there for him. And I think not only will there be great passion for him in Scotland, but victory over Catterall, if you wanted to take him back to America, will give him that traveling hordes, if you like, that can take him back to places like Vegas.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And the schedule that Sky have announced this week is stellar. Of course, we're speaking about Josh Taylor's fight there with Jack Catterall, which goes down on December the 18th. Gareth, a moment or two ago, mentioned the Jermell Herring and Shakur Stevens fight, which goes down on October the 24th. This all kicks off next week on September the 11th with Oscar Valdez taking on Robson Conceição. Obviously, this week, Todd, there's been a lot of talk about that particular fight, which kicks off this Sky schedule for everybody here in the UK this weekend coming. Mm-hmm. Listen, everybody's gone back and forth, whether it's over social media, radio shows, television shows, about whether that fight should go ahead or shouldn't go ahead. I've looked into the reasons as to why it is going ahead, and I can understand those reasons. But from a WBC point of view, can you understand the frustrations of fans as to why they don't believe that fight should go ahead, given the fact that the WBC adhere to VADA testing?
I can see that perspective. I think this is part of the education of the PED programs that we have across the board. I did not know until this week that there was a difference between the states, the regulation, and the ABC, and WADA testing and VADA testing. And it was and I'm just telling you, I had no idea there was a difference. None. I did not know that the regulatory bodies that regulate us as promoters with privileged license are the states.
Yeah.
That is the agency that we should all be in sync with. And the fighters get regulated by them too. They get licensed by them. Therefore, the agencies that are doing the testing should all be in sync with those regulatory commissions, those bodies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think this has morphed. I don't think it's an indictment of anybody, but I do believe it's an indictment of inconsistency and actually communicating the differences to both, right? And I think, because it wouldn't be fair if one fighter had USADA testing and another fighter had VADA testing. I didn't know that there was a difference in how they tested, and that the states don't accept the VADA testing. They're complying under WADA and USADA. So I think it's education for all of us. I don't think it's an indictment. The one thing we do know is the substance that was found in it is not considered a performance enhancing substance. And it's not a diuretic, which was grossly misrepresented in the media and on the social space. And people did take to that, which I really, you know, I think I take a little bit of offense to. And I think there is something of a difference between an adverse finding and a violation of a ban and prohibited substance. That was an adverse finding, right? There is difference. I remember, Gareth, and maybe you follow MMA very well. We remember when John Jones tested positive out of competition 3 weeks before a fight. He had an adverse finding of cocaine in the system, mm-hmm. right? And he went ahead and fought in 3 weeks because it was a substance that that test was taken by the state. It was a substance that was in his body, right? Out of competition, and it was an adverse finding. And until people found out that cocaine is illegal in competition, right? And we've seen this morph clearly with marijuana, right? Because Gareth, are you familiar with the testing on marijuana? I'm not implying anything here, but
no, not at all.
You know, that is not at all. I didn't think so. Tequila, you would obviously know the findings on tequila. So in this situation where you have where we've seen the rules change as a result of marijuana acceptance used for medicinal things, I think we're always on the cutting edge. So I totally see any frustration, but I do believe when there's an adverse finding, you allow a due process to occur without an indictment. And I believe that due to social media and due to the reporting that happened on this, the due process and the whole process wasn't taken correct. It was a little premature.
Listen, I think that last bit there is fair. Do you believe that this particular case then, which is obviously, and you're right, there's a lot of fight fans all over the world that didn't know the differences between the testing of WADA, the World Anti-Doping, and VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping, and that there's a discrepancy of 70 different stimulants in there for in-competition and out-competition. It's very complicated when you get right into it. But do you believe that this could be the line in the sand where we then all, we can come together and have one single one song? Because I think that's very important when we're testing for performance-enhancing drugs in the sport.
100%. 100% agree with you. UFC, which we all agree is a wonderful combat sport, is in the WADA world. They are not in the VADA world.
Yeah.
They adhere to WADA and USADA because those testing agencies, are in sync with the regulatory bodies they go into. Right? Into the states they go into the jurisdictions they go into.
How do we get to that level, Todd? How do we get to that level? Because I know that cost a lot of money.
Yeah. Do you have to speak to Margaret Goodman and VADA to get them on side? And also, I would like you to explain, is it true that it was a herbal tea that Oscar Valdez...
So there's two pieces to that. Let's talk about herbal tea. Let's talk about that, and then let's talk about the VADA's process. I mean, two very distinct things. All right. After the finding was happened, he had 77 nanograms tested for this phetamine. I don't even know how to say it. I think it's phetamine or whatever it is. The baseline was 50. So it was considered trace of a adverse finding. When we looked into it a little bit clearer, if you were taking this phetamine, which is really a metabolism, right? It's a metabolism agent. It accelerates your metabolism to help weight loss, not a diuretic, just like help weight loss. And the reason why it's banned in competition is because you're exercising. They'll want somebody to – it could elevate your heart rate. They don't want somebody to have like a heart attack or cardiac arrest. All right. So that was it. So if somebody was actually taking a full prescription of this over a period of time of over weeks, your levels would be 200. 200 would be what you would score. So he had an adverse finding of 77 when the baseline is only 50, where the benchmark is 50. So he's 27 points above it. So I believe, and I don't know, that small trace amount was, from his camp's perspective, they were not sure where it came from. Could it come from tarnished supplements? We know that supplements, you know, there's the supplement makers are sometimes made with other supplements, and you can get traces if they're making different pills in there. They don't know. And I think his lawyers and representatives came to a deduction that it possibly could be in an herbal tea or something like that. That was only a throw a dart at a dartboard type of guess. I'm not sure, but I'm not sure that could actually be realistic, but that was what they represented. I'm not saying that is only what I was told in a document provided by the letter from the attorney. So I think somehow it got into his system. And as we could see the trace amount at a 77, I don't know. And I think they were all guessing themselves. Right. So that's on that side. As it relates to Margaret and Vada, I believe that we are all, if it's the British board, if it's the ABC or the state of Nevada or New York or whatever, I think it's on all of them to represent what are the parameters and be aligned. Yep. What our testing protocol is, right? And we, Top Rank, we are not a party to these agreements. We just say, okay, Fighter A and Fighter B want to do it. Hey, guys, here is VADA. Here is USADA. You guys have a civil agreement with them to do this testing program, right? We are not a party to it. And that's how it works. I just did not know, and I don't think anybody on my side knew, that there was an inconsistency that existed. And I believe the organizations should be consistent with the regulators and the agencies that are doing the testing.
I think,
and I hope we get to that place very quickly.
I think every fight fan's on board with that,
We had a similar situation, exactly the same in a certain way, when there was a substance that wasn't banned in the UK, that was banned in the USA, that Billy Joe Saunders had taken for a nasal treatment for flu. If you recall, and he tested positive in America because it was banned there, but it was negative over here. And there was no issue with the boxing board of control over here, Scott, but he obviously didn't fight Demetrius Andrade over in the States, did he? Because I think it's not only is it the WADA and VADA, but they have to be completely on the same playing field, I think, all three, on exactly what substances there are. As Adam said just now, there's a discrepancy of 70... different stimulants. And by the way, phentermine that you were talking about, I looked into this myself this week. There are loads of products in the chemist, in a pharmacy, that contain phentermine, which is like, you know, it does help weight loss. So I completely agree with both of you. I think we should really push this in boxing at the moment to get everyone on a level playing field and try and create it. WADA is a global body. USADA is the American body. I think they need to come into alignment with the British Boxing Board of Control. And I think VADA need to fit in there in the same way.
I agree 100% with you. What troubled me, and I'm looking backwards, what troubles me is I felt that it was misrepresented because I thought that they were all aligned. I thought this is the agencies. They're conducting this. They do a great job. They send them, and I thought all of their rules were aligned. I had no idea there was a discrepancy, right? And I don't believe, you know. And when you think about it, you know, it would, you know. And then what I heard is if you took phentermine, right, and then you went off it, it actually could have an adverse effect to you because your body. Right. If you went off it, like, you know, your body would be used to an artificial metabolism in there. So it brings you down. It's not being fed that artificial metabolism. Right. So there is actually an adverse effect when you would be if you used it out of competition and in competition. But I think regardless of all that, it's consistency.
Yeah.
Consistency across the board. It's being unified. Understanding what the rules are in UK and in Germany and in France and in Japan and in Latin America and the United States. And we're all part of this because we compete on a global level and it's a global sport, right? We don't change based on different jurisdictions. You're not changing the parameters of a football pitch or something like that. I don't think you do, but I mean, or an NFL, it's 100 yards. 100 yards is 100 yards. Keep it that way. And I think the burden, we can support it, but the truth is we are a member. We are given a privileged license, and the onus is on the regulators to get together with the agencies and have a consistent program.
There you go. We thank Todd for his honesty, his openness, and his willingness to talk about that difficult situation. Don't forget that fight does go ahead this week. I'm sure the debate will continue, and it will continue, no doubt, on our Fight Night show next weekend. We're going to keep things stateside because a young man that's been impressing everybody in the welterweight division is Virgil Ortiz. He's knocking out former champions. He's beating former world title contenders. And now he believes that he's on the cusp of something very, very special. I caught up with him a little earlier in the week to discuss the rise of Virgil. I know about your amateur pedigree and obviously being seven-time national champion and what you did at the Junior Olympics. But was there any other sport? You seem an incredibly athletic guy. So was there any other sports that maybe you flirted with that you thought maybe I could go down this route rather than fights or not?
Other than boxing, it was probably just cross country, you know. And I'm not going to say I was great at it. I thought I ran okay. I ran a 17:27 was my fastest time in the 3 mile. But
jeez,
you know, there's,
man, that's like we class that as a 5 kilometer race here. That's quick.
Yeah.
Quick.
Oh, actually, yeah, it's a 5K. We classify them as 5Ks too.
Well, on that journey, as a young person, obviously, I know that your father's involved in your career and what have you, but there's got to be a moment of realization for yourself of when you genuinely start to believe, I'm going to make a career out of boxing. When was that moment?
I didn't have a moment like that. I just kind of always knew, you know? I mean, even when I was a little kid, you know, it's just like, okay, I've been to some professional cards, right? With professional boxing matches. I always thought to myself, oh, I'm going to be fighting up there one day. There was never a moment. There was never a moment like, you know what? Maybe I want to be a pro too. I never had that moment. I just always knew.
Obviously, stepping into the program at a young age and doing what you're doing and coming through the weights now, obviously, at welter. When you hear someone like Oscar De La Hoya refer to you as the future of boxing, how does that make you feel?
You know, it makes me feel very motivated. I don't want to say satisfied because I'm nowhere near satisfied. That just maybe like almost like even hopeful, you know, we're doing this. I'm on the right track. I can do this. You know, it gives me a lot of reassurance, a lot of confidence in myself. And it just gives me that drive.
Again, coming back to that reassurance that you just said there, to have someone like that say things like that about yourself reaffirms the things probably that are already going on inside your head, because you seem quite a guy that isn't one of these that is brash, talking the talk, always on social media. There are other people obviously in this game that use that, but you just seem like the type of guy that goes about the business. And your downtime, play guitar, do a bit of gaming, go to the gym, work hard. But when the bright lights come on, man, you don't half turn up.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just how I am, you know. I do my job. I'm straight to the point. And once my job's over, then I go do the stuff that I want to do, like the guitar and all stuff. And don't get me wrong, I love doing boxing. But, you know, after like a 2-month camp and then I fight, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. And I can just chill. I can play my guitar. Like right now, I'm trying to learn music theory. That's what I'm trying to learn. I have some notes written down. Like I'm actually taking a course by myself.
Serious?
You know, doing some stuff. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
And that's what I'm doing right now.
What was the reason for that? Is that just to give you your brain something else to do other than just fight? What's the reason behind it?
In a way, yeah. But also, I want to be more creative with music. I want the doors to open. You know, I feel like I've hit a roadblock. Like, I'm kind of stuck creatively. So learning new stuff is going to open everything up.
I understand. Yeah. Listen, let's get on to a little bit of boxing before we wrap this up, man. Obviously, you've been absolutely unbelievable. 18 fights, 18 wins, 18 knockouts, and it's a level of opponent as well that you're beating that is exciting a lot of people in the world. You said in your post-fight interview at the weekend, you know how boxing is. Obviously, we as fans have frustrations with the politics of boxing. You as fighters must have frustrations with the politics of boxing as well. We think you're ready. I believe that you think you're ready. How quickly do you think that we could get this turn around where you are where you're challenging at the very top table of this welterweight division?
I don't think we're too far from that. You know, I just fought a top 10 guy. I got him out of there. I only want to fight better guys. I want my competition to keep getting better and better every time. It's only going to be a matter of time before one of those is a champion, you know? Mm. So, like I said, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I feel like I'm ready for it and I want it to happen. I can't give you a straight answer of when it's going to happen, to be honest.
Yeah, I appreciate it's hard, man. What do you do in the interim then? So, for example, Crawford and Porter fight mandated. We've got a situation with Spence. We've just had Ugas. What do you do in the interim? Because I know that you're going to fight by the end of the year. What level of opponent do you fight in order to keep you happy and to keep you moving along at the rate that you're moving along?
I mean, a top 10 guy, you know, let me see. I think it's Jamal James.
Yeah.
You know, there's just Jamal James. He's, I think he has the interim or the regular WBA, but they're getting rid of all the belts. I don't even know who's going to stay with the belt or not.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to have my belt yet. Cause I don't even know if I have the WBA gold anymore. See, I'm like confused right now. I don't know what's going on.
Does that bother you? Does that bother you as a fighter?
It doesn't necessarily bother me, but I would like to know what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And Ugas just fought. Ugas just fought. I just fought. So, you know, possibly we can make that fight happen. Possibly.
Hmm.
Crawford's fighting Porter. Spence can't fight. Pacquiao's probably going to retire. I don't know. I really don't know, but... Like I said, just give me a good fighter, reputable name, and let's get it going.
We got a guy coming through in the UK, Conor Benn. I'm sure you're aware of him. What do you make of him? What do you make of Conor?
He's a good fighter. He's definitely a good fighter. I mean, he stopped Sammy Vargas in the first round, so that's pretty good in my opinion. I was impressed by that. He's a pretty good fighter.
From a UK fan's point of view, obviously we'd love to see you over here in the UK. You and Conor, maybe somewhere down the line, that'd be something special.
That'd be a pretty good fight, and I would love to visit the UK one day as well. I want to go to London. I want to see the London Eye. I want to eat some food, all that stuff.
Mate, and taking some concerts as man at some of the venues that we've got here with your guitar. There you go.
Oh yeah, thanks.
Just a quick one, Virgil. When can we expect to see you fight? Have you got a month in particular?
I really don't know. If I had to guess the timing, I would probably have to say mid to the end of November or early December. I really don't know if that's going to be accurate or not. That's just what I feel like it would be.
Now then, one man that is part of the Sky Sports deal that I mentioned at the start of the show is Chris Eubank Jr. He's going to be back out at the start of October. He very kindly joined us on the show on Saturday night to discuss his excitement of doing that and what he wants over the next 12 months.
It's going to be fun. We're kicking off the next generation of Sky Sports boxing, and it's going to be, you know, I'm going to be able to unleash a lot of the things I've been working on with my new coach, Roy Jones. So I'm excited. Yeah, only 4 weeks to go.
I wanted to talk to you about that because during the pandemic, we've had this crazy time where people haven't been able to do X, Y, and Z in gyms and what have you. And if anybody does keep up to date with you on social media, they'll know that you're always in the gym anyway, always working. But it's good to see that you've managed to get over to the States and at certain points, living in Roy's house and what have you, and working away. Talk to me about that relationship and how you believe that has brought you on to the next level now in your career.
Yeah, I guess I was fortunate enough to be in a position to go and train with Roy through COVID. So even though, you know, I've been inactive in the ring in terms of, you know, the amount of fights I've been able to have over the last couple of years, I've still been very active in the gym, learning and improving as a fighter. And I do feel I have improved as a fighter, even though I haven't been active in terms of, you know, boxing live. So, you know, I've just been, I turned a negative into a positive. I've just spent as much time as I could with the master, who is Roy Jones Jr., just learning and absorbing everything he has to give. And yeah, we get to now, you know, show the fruits of our labor over the next 6 to 12 months in some great fights.
Do you know something? It's interesting that you look at it like that. A lot of people have obviously taken maybe the negative approach to what's happened over the last 18 months. It's a rare opportunity to have that break, I suppose, and for you to get the opportunity to hone your craft with a new voice and a new brain in your corner, especially one as esteemed as Roy Jones Jr., is a fascinating thing for all fans. And we're excited to see what he has added to the Arsenal come October the 1st.
Yeah, you guys saw, you know, a little taster against, my last fight against Marcus Morrison. But, you know, that was just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more to come. And, as I get in there with better and better opponents, you guys are going to see more and more of what we've been working on. And it's exciting stuff.
Chris, you've got some Sven Elbeer coming up. He's known as Batman. We don't quite know why he's known as Batman yet, but 18-1, he's ranked 14 with the WBA, 14 knockouts there out of his 18 victories. Tell us what you know about him, because you'll be preparing for him.
Everything you've said is pretty much what I know. I've watched one or two of his fights. He's a strong, rugged, come-forward fighter. He's not going to back down. He's only had one defeat in his whole career. So, you know, really, he doesn't know how to lose. And I've been told that he doesn't think he lost that fight. You know, he thinks he was robbed in that one. So he still has the undefeated mentality, which is always tough to take from a man. So I'm expecting, a tough fight, and I'm fully prepared.
So you get through that one. We know you want the big names. How much are you kind of itching to get in there with the likes of Saul Canelo Alvarez? He's a guy you said you definitely have been targeting for a long time. And, of course, Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, those are the names, especially Golovkin at this stage, because I am campaigning at middleweight, and Golovkin is a middleweight world champion. And no one's trying to fight the guy. That fight has been, their camp has shown interest. They've been in contact with us, so that fight should be able to be made. I know I can beat him. So, after this fight, yeah, we're targeting the big names and the big title fights, 100%.
Chris, what have you made of all the WBA situation recently? Obviously, you were an interim title holder, and we thought that maybe that would then get you mandated into fighting one of the regular title holders, maybe with the WBA, but everything that's happened over the last week or so, what have you made of it all?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good thing because, it seemed hard for me to actually pin a fight down with this Morata, who is the superior champion in the WBA. But now it seems, now they've taken these interim belts away and said that anyone with that have an interim belt is mandatory, and they're going to force the fights now. Mm. So, that would be an awesome fight to have at the end of the year. If they keep to their word and say that he has to fight me, then absolutely I would get in the ring with Batman and go for the WBA super belt. So it's just up for, my promoter and the Salem brothers and Wasserman and Sky Sports to get together and make these big fights, and they can be made and they will be made.
Does that not... having Ryota Murata as a target and having the full WBA belt, does that not give you a position of strength to chase the likes of Golovkin, maybe get him to fight over here, get it in front of a big crowd and have a unification of the IBF and WBA, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, it makes the case stronger, but, even without that, the fight can still be made. But obviously with a belt, it becomes a lot bigger. That's the thing, that Golovkin has run out of guys to fight. So, he's in a corner, he has to defend his belt. And who does everyone want to see him fight? Who's he going to make the most money with or against? And that's me. So, if push comes to shove, then we'll get the belt and use it. But I don't think it'll even come to that. But, obviously that is a path to go down, get the belt and then fight GGG after.
Speaking of money, your old adversary, Mr. Joe Saunders, has named his price this week on social media. I don't know if you caught that. If you did, what do you think of it?
I heard him say he's demanding £5 million to fight me. The funny thing is, he's not in a position to be demanding anything. He has no belt. He has no credibility in the sport after he quit against Saul Canelo Alvarez, after saying that he'd, uh, you know, he died before he ever, you know, took a knee in the ring. You know, lambasted Daniel Dubois when he quit after an eye injury, a real eye injury, you know, at that, because I don't, you know, there was nothing wrong with Saunders' eye. He got a black eye, but there was no smashed orbital bone. There was no broken eye socket. You know, there was no proof of that. That was all a sham. You know, that's why he's been MIA for the last month, you know, 3 or 4 months, because of the shame of what he did. So he has no credibility. He has no power in the sport. So he can't be going around saying he wants $5 million. He'll get what he's given. You know, on the A side. So, you know, once he understands that, then we can talk and we can set something up.
Is that a fight you do want, and you want to put the record straight from the fight? What was it, 7, 8 years ago? Is that one that burns inside you?
You know, it used to burn inside. Now, it, you know, he really is not on my radar. He has nothing. He has no respect. He has no belt. You know, so it's not something that's super important to me. Obviously, he has a win over me, so I'll always want to avenge that. You know, but I'm not going to go out of my way. I'm not going to break my back to make the fight. You know, he needs me. I'm his only option. He literally has no one else to fight, whereas I have, you know, an untold amount of names of fights that are available to me over the next year, 2 years. Huge, huge fights. So, you know, as long as everything's in my terms, we can make it happen. And I'm sure we will at some point in the future.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, next week, Fight Night comes to you live from the Copperbox Arena. Sonny Edwards is at the top of the bill. Callum Johnson's also on that bill as well, as is a man that fell short in his last fight against Felix Cash, the one and only Denzel Bentley. He's getting back on the horse and doing his business in front of his hometown fans. He joined us on the show on Saturday to discuss his excitement about getting back out there.
Yeah, I'm very excited, man. I can't wait. After my last fight, I wanted to get back out the week after and just put things right, so I'm happy. It's just next week, it's around the corner, and like you said, the crowd's back. I've had 4 fights behind closed doors with no crowd, so it might feel a bit odd to me at first, but I'm happy the crowd's back.
Last time out, obviously you suffered your first defeat, mate, and it was a big fight built up for the British and Commonwealth title against Felix Cash, and it was just one of those fights where Felix caught you and it just didn't seem like you could just recuperate in time before he ended up getting the finish. What were your immediate thoughts in the aftermath, and obviously as the dust has now settled, what are your reflections on that fight?
My immediate thoughts after was, can we restart the day and go again? Yeah. That was my immediate thoughts. I just wanted to, you know, just make it right. I was very upset. I was angry. I was upset, angry, embarrassed, everything really. But and after I settled down, I still felt the same. I felt like I didn't get to show, you know, what I'm capable of. Didn't get to put up a fight. Like, it was a fight that I honestly felt like I could win. Like you said, I got caught early, didn't really recuperate, got caught again in the third, and, you know, he done what he needed to do. So I was upset with myself. You know, he done his job. He stuck to his game plan and ended up getting the win, but I was just upset with myself. I just wanted to get back in the gym and get back out and make things right.
Now, Mr. Battersea Banger, victory next weekend. are you going to be targeting some of those guys who perhaps have world rankings at the moment? The likes, for example, like you and Liam Williams will be a fantastic matchup at some point. Sam Eggington, perhaps. What's the route you want to take with victory next weekend?
100%. I've still got the same, you know, the same mindset. I still want to take the same path. I still want to go down that route where, you know, fight a few people with world rankings and find my way back into the world rankings and hopefully end up with a world title shot at some point in my career. So it's still the same energy for me. I'm not, you know, looking to take a big backward step and, you know, start trying to find my feet again. I'm getting stuck straight in there with Andrew Robertson. He's a tough guy. That could be for an eliminator itself. Do you know what I mean? His last fight was against William. So, you know, I'm still not trying to take an easy route to the top. I'm just trying to get back in there. All them names you mentioned are all still potential fights down the line, you know, starting with, you know, like you said, a victory next week and then hopefully another victory by the end of the year. And then next year, we just go into some big fights again.
One of the things we're celebrating tonight at Headingley, Denzel, is the fact that there's crowds back again. Does that, yeah, you know, you're an emotive, emotional, aggressive fighter who gives his all, warrior spirits and all those things. Is the fact that crowds are now back a big difference for you and that you can be out there more, that we're not in lockdown?
100%. 100%. I miss, you know, the people come for me, just cheering me on and, you know, just chanting my name and pushing me on and all of those things, just the excitement about it, the build up to the fight. And watching that today was just crazy. It felt like, oh man, yeah, like everything's back. There's like 20,000 in there and it looked wonderful. It looked awesome. I can't wait to get back out next week with the crowd and, you know, just hear them going crazy, especially if I put on a spectacular performance, the reception's going to be mad. When I won my British title, I was looking around, there was like no one to cheer with. I just had to go back to my corner and you know, celebrate with the team. So I'm looking forward to all of that excitement again.
It's been a weird period of our life, hasn't it? I mean, we experience those fighters that are brilliant in the gym sometimes, and then when they go under the bright lights in front of all the fans, they clam up a little bit and freeze and don't perform to the potential that they should be performing to. You're one of those fighters. Listen, I've been at training camps with you and watched you work, so I know that you're putting in the graft, my friend. But you do seem to be the type of gentleman that does excel on the fight night when the lights are on. I think you're a bit of an extrovert, a bit of a showman. You kind of like the eyes and the attention being on you. So walking out into an auditorium when there's nobody there must have been a very weird experience.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird. I love it. Like you said, I love it. Like when the crowd's there and eyes are on me and it's time to perform, it's showtime. Like, show them what you got then. That kind of guy, that's me. It's time to go. But with the behind closed door stuff, it had to get used to it. Like the first fight with Mick Hall was just odd. I'm walking out and it's like, I'm walking out to nothing really. It's like, yeah, you might as well just put me in the ring. You know what I mean? And, I can't, you know, I'm not soaking up anything. It's just me and my forces. No one's getting crazy. All right, cool. And then, you know, done it with the first Heffron fight. And then by the second Heffron fight, it was like, okay, this is normal. I've done it twice now. I know what to expect. And then it just became normal to me. It's like, okay, me and my thoughts just lock in now and, you know, focus and concentrate. But you can't beat a crowd, man. Like, just, you know, waiting on your moonwalk. The MC announces your name. Everyone's getting crazy that they're supporting you. And it's like, okay, yeah, now we're ready. Now it's showtime. Let's go. That's the feeling that I miss and I can't wait for next week.
Looking forward to it.
Can I just ask, can I go away from boxing for a moment? Because this is what fascinates me. Obviously, you're British-born, but of Ghanaian heritage. And yeah. I've got to ask you about this because I haven't had a chance to ask you about this before, and it's great to do it on air. Obviously, Ghana has produced an incredible, from Jamestown, Accra, some great, 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 great fighters. Azuma Nelson probably at the head of all those. Can I ask you about, you know, obviously you won the Lonsdale belt outright and then you went to Ghana. I know you visit regularly. Can you tell me what happened when you had your audience with the king of the Ashanti Kingdom, Otumfo Nana Osei Tutu II?
Oh, you got that right. Spot on. Yeah, it was amazing. You know, it was crazy. Like, I was actually nervous. I thought I was going to be all right and I got there. And then because there was a fun day, like a little fun fair, they do like every six weeks on a Sunday. And I just happened to be at the right time. And they're like, yeah, come for the fair, basically. And he called up my name and they were going to present me. And I was like, oh, snap. It just like, walking through there felt like another kind of ring walk. Like, oh, snap. I don't want to get anything wrong. I don't want to do the wrong things. I want to make sure everything's right. I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is the king of the Ashanti Kingdom here. Like, I'm meeting up for the first time. But to give me his blessings and tell me how proud of he is that I'm representing the country. So that was kind of nerve-wracking. I got there, you know, nothing but nice words from him. It was all good. It was nice. It was lovely meeting him.
Did you know all the protocols? Did you know all the protocols that you had to do in front of him? Were there certain things that you had to do?
I didn't. No one gave me a heads up, but on the way there, I was getting little whispers from everyone. Like, because there was quite a few people there. They'd be like, oh, yeah, we do that. Oh, do this. All right, don't do that. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was just taking it in on the way there. So I managed to, you know, do all right.
That's next week. We've still got to review what happened at the weekend just gone. In the immediate aftermath of UFC Vegas 36, Paddy Pimlet and Molly McCann joined us on the show. Both of those receiving 50 grand bonuses because of their performances. Congratulations to them. Congratulations to them on the victories. God only knows what state they left Las Vegas in off the back of the victories and the bonus payments. Anyway, they joined us on the show live in the immediate aftermath of their victories.
Lads, me and Paddy are only in the polls. So you've got me and Paddy, lads.
Excellent. Well, do me a favour, right? Molly, we'll do you first. Just warn Paddy in a minute, right? No swears because right. It's live radio, all right? So that's what we've got.
Okay, no problem.
Right, no now, Molly, obviously, on your performance, top of the prelims, listen, whether you felt it or not, lots of pressure on you this evening going into this fight. What a performance to win unanimously across all the cards, to do it in the way that you did it. It must have been a sensational feeling.
Listen, we spoke, Adam. We knew this was the last fight on my contract. I was on a 2-fight skid. I lost my career and the UFC was over. I perform, I get a brand new 4-fight deal. And I got caught with a headbutt in the early part of the first round and it properly chased me, Adam. But I just thought, how much do I want this? How much do I want bragging rights in my city? How hard do scouts work? Or anyone in England, how tough is this time in the pandemic? I'm in Las Vegas. I deserve this time. Now I need this win. And I told you, I'm going to let them hands fly, rumble, little meatball, rumble. And I've done it, lads.
There is that. When people do get to the UFC, you've spoke about this yourself, there seems to be pressure, external pressure from people where they're talking about, oh, you need to be more rounded, you need to do more wrestling, you need to do more jiu-jitsu. But the thing that got you to the UFC was your tenacity, was your hands, and from the moment the cage door shut tonight, it was like watching old meatball that absolutely took Cage Warriors by storm. To do it in that manner, Molly, must have been a real gratifying feeling, because that's who you are. That's who you are deep down, right inside you. That tonight that you showed the world is exactly who you are.
My first fight in the UFC, I got owned by jiu-jitsu, you know, and I've worked the last 3 years on my grappling now. I'm literally telling you, the only reason I've lost my last 2 fights is because I haven't had a crowd there to push me, because I am able to get through the weird situations, just like my little bro Paddy is. Like, because the crowd is there, and I knew, go back to what makes me. And in the second round, I had a trip there and took her down, and then Paul Rimmer was like, don't kick, don't wrestle, just box. Not in those exact words, but he was just like, your striking's winning. And he just said to me in that last round, like, it could have been 2-0 to me, it could have been 1-1, and he just said, listen, go near me, go and get what's yours. And I done it. I just done it, lad. Like, me thumb's broke. One of my knuckles, like, my thumb on my left hand, on my right hand, my knuckles broke. So, like, I was reserving the big shots for the last round because I thought, his arms are too long that I can't stay within the red zone, within the tight area where she can clinch in me. I showed, when I was held against the cage, that's what made me lose my last 2 fights. I was patient. I looked at the clock and I seen when the right time would be to go and try and steal the round back. I haven't watched it. I was a bit dazed. I can't really remember too much of the fight other than just being game and making sure that I started the card off well for the rest of the scouts.
Molly, I've got to say congratulations. And there's a theme tonight. I was kind of waxing lyrical about having sat down with you in Dublin for an hour a couple of years back, and just going away from it. It stayed with me, the resonance of you as an inspirational person. I'm out here in Tokyo at the Paralympic Games at the moment. I've been here for the last couple of weeks. And, you know, again, I had it a couple of nights ago here, a lady called Beth Monrose, an amputee taekwondo fighter from Liverpool, who's an inspirational figure. Her fifth competitive bout, she won a silver medal here against a brilliant fighter. Yeah. But I know we're going to talk to Paddy in a minute as well, and Darren's on at the moment. What is it about you guys that you're able to try and try again? Where does that spirit come from? Because I find it utterly inspirational.
Without trying to build like yourself and a North divide and getting too much into politics, but the city was ravaged in the 70s and the 80s, and it was just like we weren't going down, like we were swinging. Do you know what I mean? And we've never had it easy, and I'm not trying to be like poor Liverpool, poor us, but we've just learned to get on with it. And it's the same as the Irish, it's the same as the Mexicans, it's the same as the Welsh, it's the same as the Scottish. There's certain places on this earth where you have to fight for everything, because if you don't, like, you're not going to survive, you know what I mean? And there's just no quitting us, there's no quitting. I like to pride myself on my resilience and my adversity and how much I want it will beat everyone else, because I might not be the most technical, guys. My arms aren't the longest, they're the shortest in the whole of the earth. I have just fought someone and outboxed them who has 10 inches on me, madness, on my reach. So do you know what? I've proved my worth, you know?
Absolutely. Listen, absolutely. Put the lunatic on. Let's see what he's got to say after his unit.
Well done, Molly.
he's got off. I'm sorry, he's got off.
He's done one.
He's done one.
Well, listen.
How's Darren getting on?
He's taken a few whacks in the first round. He's still in there. It's a very, very close, tight fight. Listen, I watched you stay behind to obviously watch Paddy. I know that you're very close, very with your, obviously,
did
your camp and your team. Of course. Of course, absolutely. But just talk to me about him, right? Because as a guy that has had offers in the past to come to the UFC, turned them down because he self-admittedly has said, I'm not ready for the UFC yet. I'm still growing. I'm still learning who I am. For him to burst onto the scene like that this evening, absolutely phenomenal. And the birth of a new superstar coming out of Merseyside.
And we all knew it was happening. We all knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when. I've done that for him a few times. We've met, like, I've opened the card for him, and then he's come out and put proper, like, good fights on, do you know what I mean? And like, we have that good vibe together. But regardless if I was here or not, that was coming. He's stopped the party, and he stopped all the nonsense outside, and he's committed and given himself to this. So I'm so proud that, like, I can't even put into words how happy I am. I'm so sore, lads. My head, my hands. Oh God, I'm trying to be really professional because
I can tell. Now listen. For everybody that doesn't know this, this is a card that was obviously geared towards the European time zone. So over in Las Vegas right now, Gareth. What? Right?
Paddy's here.
Oh, is he?
Hey. Now,
listen, we'll stick him on for a second. Paddy, listen, you're live on the radio, mate, so keep the swears to yourself for a sec. All right, pal?
Yeah, I'm good. I haven't had a bevy yet.
Good lad. Good. Right, now listen, we've just been talking to Molly about, obviously, her performance tonight, and you bursting onto the scene this evening. It's well documented that in the past you've turned down the UFC, you've been growing yourself and developing and becoming a champion in another organisation, Cage Warriors. You've burst onto the scene this evening. I've no doubt that there's been many occasions over the years or so that you've thought about this debut this evening. Is the realisation of it better? Is the reality of it better than the dream of it?
Yeah, of course, as it's happened, you know what I mean? And I knew what was coming. I'm even happier that I took a nice shot off him, lad, and just kept coming forward, lad. It's what I do. I'm a born fighter, lad, and everyone's going to get to know that over the next few years, lad, because as I've said, I'm the new face of the company.
Listen, as you said on your post-fight interview, Scousers don't get knocked out. You put manners on him. There's been a lot of people thought that you would resort to your grappling prowess, but you've even proved that the hands are heavy now, man. Listen, I saw you at the weigh-in. The muscles are there as well, Sunshine. You know what I mean? You've been doing the sit-ups, haven't you?
Well, as I say, without Paul Reed, like, my body wouldn't look like this. My S&C coach, he's the man. He's turned my body into this, and then my boxing coach, Chris Williams, and all my coaches in the gym have turned my hands even better. Mainly Chris with my hands, Ellis and Adam with my kicks. And I've been doing bits of taekwondo, lad. People aren't ready, you know what I mean? People thought I was a one-dimensional grappler, lad, and that was all I could do. And I'm a mixed martial artist, lad. I'm a born fighter. People aren't ready.
Congratulations, Paddy. Adam and I were talking earlier, and I was saying how you have the personality and the resonance to really carry a big crowd and a lot of fans. How much did it help you? I know you did all the work yourself in there tonight. You only step in alone always. It's a lonely walk to go on your own. But how much did it help this week that obviously Molly's there, but Tom Aspinall's there. He's won tonight. Darren's in the main event right now. How much did it help to have all those kind of Liverpudlian teammates around you, or teammates certainly around you that you know so closely?
Yeah, it's nice, of course, goes without saying. It's just nice being here with me gym family, know what I mean? Molly's my big sister, Adam and Ellis are my big brothers, and then Paul's our Uncle Rim, as we call him, know what I mean? So that's all I need around me, lad. I don't need anyone else. And when we go somewhere, we go as a family, we're one. And that's why as soon as I was in the back watching Molly, I was just like, she's won this and I'm going to go out and knock this kid out. And I knew it was coming, lad.
Well, listen, I'm sure there might be a bonus coming your way at some point this evening. Now, if it does, don't go waxing it all in Vegas this afternoon. All right, lad. Now, I can see that obviously the time difference is very favourable to a bit of a night out. So what's the plan for the group now? I've no doubt that Molly will be getting herself dolled up, ready to rock and roll. Are you guys going out for a bevy? What's going on?
I'm getting changed as we speak. We're having a pool party with Jack Shaw.
Yeah, I'm more about my food. Me, I'm sitting here now dipping and having some Nutella with breadsticks.
That's the life of the champs. That's it. That's the life of the champs.
It's going to be heavy, this burger and chips.
Get down the pool. Go and enjoy yourself. Go and take in a bit of that Vegas sunshine. You've most certainly earned it. And we will look forward to obviously see you back in the flesh in the not too distant future when you're back on home soil. And as Paddy said in his post-fight interview, I think that the UFC will be coming to British soil sometime soon. It's going to be some show with you guys on the bill if they can get it. Absolutely. In Liverpool, isn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think it'll be Liverpool. It's too small for us now. We need if it's Liverpool, it needs to be Goodison or Anfield, because the M&S Arena is too small. We need a bigger venue.
20, 30, 40,000, lads.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Now that's the UFC reaction. We need a bit of boxing reaction as well. Of course, at Headingley at the weekend, the main event kind of left everybody a bit disappointed because after two rounds, the fight was called off due to an accidental head clash, which Maurizio Lara received a nasty cut over his left eye. Disappointment for Josh Warrington. Hopefully that fight can get remade, if it's going to take a little bit of time, no doubt, for Lara to rest and recuperate. Let's get Josh Warrington back out, because the fans came out in full force for him, didn't they? They also came out in full force for Katie Taylor and Conor Benn. Conor Benn getting the job done against Adrian Granados, and he very kindly joined us on the show on Saturday.
Mate, 21st and chanting my name. Oh, mate, it was absolutely incredible. I mean, I've honestly never had a welcome like it. It lives up to, what they say about the lead supporters. I mean, I don't know what I've ever done to deserve a welcome like that. It was absolutely incredible. It was electric.
Did it take your breath away a little bit? Because if we're really honest, your major development over the last 2 years has kind of happened behind closed doors in the pandemic without fans in stadiums and various things like that, you know? So to walk out tonight and to be greeted like that must have been something else.
I can't put it into words to you, and you'll never understand that feeling as a young man to have that many people chanting your name. Mate, it's just overwhelming. You just sort of have to take a breath and go, wow. And these are moments I take with me to my grave. It's just incredible that I deliver this much entertainment early on in my career. I'm so blessed and overwhelmed by the support I get.
Top man.
Yeah, you really are becoming a very popular figure in the sport, and it's just about walking the walk now. You talk the talk brilliantly. I mean, you were brilliant with me for the DAZN interview you did for Off the Cuff. That's out there, by the way, on the app. It's an incredible interview that Connor did with me. Sit down for, I think it was about 90 minutes in the end. We went deep, didn't we? But Connor, you looked a little frustrated and dissatisfied at the end of the fight. But when you look back on it, you just faced a guy who's a 13-year, I call him an elite journeyman, okay? He's had a 13-year pro career, 87 amateur fights, 75-2, was on the Mexican, was an alternate on the Mexican Olympic team. He's only ever been actually stopped by Danny Garcia. He's been there with Adrian Broner, Sean Porter, a raft of great fighters at welterweight. Why did you look so dissatisfied at the end?
Well, he beat Adrian Broner. He fought Rob Easter, gave hell to Sean Porter, and I've won unanimous decision. I won every single round. So when you want to look at it like that and look at, he gave hell to all them fighters and there were some really close rounds. There was not a single close round tonight. But I wanted to lay him out. You know, he's talking about he's going to humble me, he's going to do this and do that, and yet got on his bike the whole fight. Like, just don't give me all that talk. You know, so many fighters talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. So, and it just jarred me because, you know, come and have it, mate. You know, you're talking all this talk, you're blowing smoke, you're saying you're going to humble me. Well, here's your opportunity. So, and that was what bothered me. He talks about, he's Mexican and all this, and, you know, Mexican pride, and they come to fight. Well, listen, it's a compliment to me because I caught him early doors heavy. I know I did.
Yeah.
I know you can't see it, but I know I did. And, you know, he got on his bike. So, listen, it's all, you have to have these learning fights. And, you know, we grow, we evolve, we watch it, we improve, we come back. And that's what I do every single fight.
As the dust settles, though, and you kind of touched on it there, you've got a reputation now, Connor, and he felt that reputation physically, like you say, in that second round. And I think it's more a compliment.
Actually, that was the second round. I didn't say it was the second round.
Was it the second round?
Yeah, it was the second round. But I didn't say it was the second round, but it was the second round.
I think you did.
You could tell that you stung him. On the TV, you could tell that you stung him, definitely.
You could see it as well then. I haven't watched it back, but I know that when I hit him, he knew about it.
Go on, Gareth, what were you saying there, sorry?
But basically, the fact that he wanted to box you afterwards and he didn't want to go toe-to-toe, you take that as a compliment, you know? You're going to go through some of these fights.
I do, Gareth. Yeah. At the end of the day, I'm an entertainer. I'm a modern-day gladiator. Yeah. My job is to entertain. I don't care who you are. No one wants to sit and watch a boring fight. I don't care who you are. No one wants to sit down and go, yeah, let's watch the geezer run on his bike. And it's just not... I'm a crowd pleaser. You know, I fight with my heart on my sleeve. So, you know, I was expecting him to come and have it. And, you know, if he did come and have it, he definitely would have got cleaned out. Because as soon as we exchanged, you know, I got the better of him.
Mm. I've got two from me, Connor. First of all, where can I get my hand on the Crushing It in the Gym t-shirt? So, are they available?
They are available on connorden.co.uk.
There you
go.
Make
sure you get your tag, mate. Because you know what I'll be doing next week?
That's it. I'll be crushing it in the gym, mate. I'll be having a go. Absolutely that. Absolutely. My second one is this, and this might have changed, actually, and it might have changed Eddie's attitude this evening, given the response that you got from the crowd. I'm sure that he would want to put you in front of another stadium crowd here in the UK. But for me, I'm ready for an American trip, mate, and I reckon you're the guy that could take a few fans over. You know what I mean? A little bit of New York, a little bit of Vegas, something like that. What do you reckon?
You know what, man? I just can't believe, I'm still overwhelmed by the support I got. I mean, wow. I don't know what to say about it. And the thought that people would come to America to watch me fight is just like, wow. I'm so grateful for my supporters. I mean, I'm just so blessed for the supporters, honestly. And, you know, seeing that today, I must be doing something right.
Absolutely. Listen, there's talk of the Broner fight. Is that something that you want?
I'll have Broner next. I'll have Broner here at the O2. I'll have Broner in a stadium out in America. It don't bother me, but Broner's definitely an opponent I'd love to fight and share the ring with this year. Obviously, that's if he wants it again. four-time world division world champion. I ain't shying away from nobody. If he wants to fight, you know, I'll happily give it to him. And that's not a problem, you know. And he presents, again, a different struggle. Every fighter I fight presents a different struggle. From Vargas to Formella to Granados, they're all presenting different struggles. Mm. And, you know, I believe I have the skill, mindset to overcome whatever obstacle they present. So I believe I'll figure Bonner out and I'll get to him. And I think that makes for a great fight for the British fans.
Have you talked seriously with Eddie Hearn about making that Broner fight, Connor?
I think he's already on it. I think he's
really?
On it before the Granados fight.
Fantastic.
So that's a potential reality, is it?
Yeah, it is definitely a reality. My job is to focus on beating the man up on the other corner on the night. His job is to make the fights happen, show them the bag, and, you know, they can get a beating. So
Is that this year, do you think?
Very possibly.
So there you have it. The guest list was absolutely ram-jam full Saturday night. That's what it's like every Saturday. So if you liked what you heard, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can do it on iTunes or via the TalkSport website. Don't forget, next week we are live from the Copper Box Arena. Sonny Edwards in action, Callum Johnson in action, and you heard Denzel Bentley a little earlier on. He's also in action as well. So come and join us for that, and we'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.